They told the people freedom would change everything. Jobs would come. Land would be fairer. Schools would open doors that had always been closed. Dignity would finally belong to those who had waited generations for it. In Kingston, Port of Spain, and Bridgetown, independence arrived with flags, anthems, and certainty. Leaders spoke with confidence. Crowds believed them. This was supposed to be the clean break. Colonial rule out, self-rule in, the future handled by our own. But beneath the ceremonies, the structures stayed the same. Economies still leaned outward. Power still sat with the few. The systems that once served empire now served new governments that had little room to maneuver. Within years, hope began to thin, promises stalled, daily life did not match the speeches, and people started asking a dangerous question. Not whether independence was right, but whether it had ever been real. This is the story of that moment, when freedom arrived, and disappointment followed close behind. Chapter 1, The Promise of the Break. By the early 1950s, the Caribbean was tired of waiting. Colonial rule had lasted centuries. It had reshaped land, labor, language, and power. By mid-century, it was no longer defended as permanent. It was managed as temporary. In Jamaica, Trinidad, and Barbados, Britain was stepping back, but not retreating in panic. This was an orderly exit, controlled, timetabled, presented as progress. London framed it as generosity. Caribbean leaders framed it as victory. The pressure did not come from nowhere. Trade unions had grown strong during the 1930s and 1940s. Workers had shut down sugar estates, oil fields, docks, and transport lines. Hunger and low wages made protest unavoidable. Colonial governors learned that stability now depended on negotiation, not force. Out of those struggles came political parties. They were rooted in labor movements, churches, and community networks. They spoke the language of uplift. Jobs, housing, education, respect. They promised to take power from absentee owners and foreign administrators and place it in Caribbean hands. For the public, independence was not an abstract idea. It was practical. It meant better pay. It meant land access. It meant a government that listened. People expected results, not symbols. They were not asking for perfection. They were asking for relief. Britain responded by reshaping the colonies into nations without dismantling the systems underneath. Constitutions were drafted, elections expanded, local ministers replaced colonial officials. The legal framework changed names, not bones. In Jamaica, the path moved quickly. Self-government arrived in 1959. Independence followed in 1962. Campaigns were loud and confident. Leaders promised modernization, industrial growth, and social investment. The island would stand on its own feet. In Trinidad, oil revenue made the future look secure. The presence of energy resources created a sense of advantage. Independence in 1962 was framed as the natural next step for a country already earning foreign exchange. Confidence ran high. Barbados followed with less noise but equal expectation. Its economy was smaller, its population tighter knit. Independence in 1966 was presented as proof that discipline and stability would be rewarded. The message was calm but firm. We are ready. Across all three, independence ceremonies followed the same rhythm. British flags came down, new flags rose, anthems played, speeches promised unity and prosperity. The world was watching, the people were listening. What mattered most was what happened before those ceremonies. In the final years of colonial rule, Britain made clear what independence would not include. There would be no mass land redistribution, no rewriting of trade relationships, no cancellation of debt, no restructuring of ownership. Plantation economies remained intact. Sugar still dominated Jamaica and Barbados. Oil and gas defined Trinidad. Export dependence continued. Local governments inherited economies designed to serve external markets, not internal development. The civil service also stayed largely the same. Colonial administrators trained local replacements, but the structure did not change. Decision-making remained centralized. Procedures favored caution over innovation. Ministries were prepared to manage, not to transform. Education systems carried the same limits. They produced clerks, teachers, and administrators. They did not produce enough engineers, planners, or industrial managers. Independence arrived faster than capacity could be built. None of this was hidden, but it was rarely emphasized in public speeches. Leaders spoke about sovereignty and pride. They spoke about dignity and destiny. They did not dwell on constraints. The The public heard the promises louder than the fine print. For people living in overcrowded housing, working unstable jobs, or farming marginal land, independence sounded like a reset, a line drawn between suffering and improvement. There was also pressure to believe. After generations of being told that self-rule was impossible, independence had to succeed. Doubt felt disloyal. Criticism felt premature. Britain understood this psychology. It framed independence as completion, not transition. Once the handover occurred, responsibility shifted fully to the new governments. Structural weaknesses could now be described as local failures. Early elections reinforced the sense of mandate. Turnout was high. Political parties won clear victories. Leaders interpreted this as approval for their vision. In reality, voters were endorsing hope. Behind the scenes, negotiations continued. Trade agreements tied exports to British and European markets. Currency systems were linked to sterling. Foreign investment was encouraged without strict regulation. These choices were described as pragmatic. They were also binding. New governments had little leverage. Walking away risked capital flight and unemployment. Staying the course meant delayed change. The contradiction sat quietly at the center of independence. Political authority had shifted. Economic power had not. The public was rarely invited to confront this gap directly. In Jamaica, campaigns promised industrialization through foreign investment. Factories would be built. Jobs would follow. Growth would lift everyone. The model depended on outside capital and tax concessions. It assumed benefits would trickle down. In Trinidad, oil wealth was expected to fund national development. The state would collect revenue and invest in infrastructure and services. This required careful management and long-term planning. It also required resisting foreign pressure. In Barbados, stability was the selling point. The island would attract tourism and investment through calm governance and reliable institutions. Growth would come through reputation and order. Each path was framed as sensible. Each depended on global systems that Caribbean nations did not control. None of this erased the emotional power of independence. For the first time, national leaders spoke as equals on the world stage. Caribbean flags appeared at international forums. Passports changed. Names mattered. But symbols do not feed families. They do not fix housing shortages. They do not rebalance land ownership. By the mid-1960s, questions began to surface quietly. Why were wages still low? Why were prices rising? Why did foreign companies seem protected while local people struggled? These questions did not yet dominate politics. Hope still held. Time was still being given. Leaders asked for patience. They said transformation takes time. The public listened. But expectations had been set high, and time was already being measured against daily reality. Independence had delivered the break from Britain. It had not yet delivered the break from inequality. As the celebrations faded and governing began, the gap between promise and structure became harder to ignore. The systems were now ours, the pressure was now internal, and the first real tests were about to arrive. Chapter 2. Freedom without control. Independence did not arrive into empty space. It arrived into economies already shaped, limited, and locked into place. The new governments inherited responsibility without leverage, expectation without tools. In Jamaica, Trinidad, and Barbados, the first years of self-rule were spent discovering how narrow the room to move really was. Budgets were tight. Foreign exchange was fragile. Imports cost more than exports earned. Growth depended on decisions made elsewhere. The plantation economy never truly ended. In Jamaica and Barbados, sugar still dominated land use and employment. Ownership patterns barely shifted. Large estates remained intact. Small farmers existed at the margins, vulnerable to price swings and weather. Industrial diversification was promised, but slow to materialize. Factories required capital. Capital required concessions. Governments offered tax holidays, cheap land, and relaxed regulation to attract foreign companies. Jobs were created, but not in the numbers promised. The logic was defensive. Officials feared unemployment more than dependence. They chose stability over confrontation. Each concession was justified as temporary. Most became permanent. In Trinidad, oil complicated the picture. Revenue flowed, but control did not. Multinational companies dominated extraction and pricing. The state received royalties and taxes, but not authority over production decisions. Wealth existed alongside inequality. Oil money also masked deeper problems. It delayed hard conversations about diversification. It funded services without restructuring the economy. When prices dipped, vulnerability was exposed. Across all three countries, public spending rose quickly. Governments expanded education, healthcare, and infrastructure. These were necessary moves. They were also expensive. Revenue did not always keep pace. Debt began to grow. Borrowing filled gaps. Loans came with conditions. Development plans increasingly reflected the priorities of lenders rather than communities. Political culture shifted under pressure. Independence leaders had risen as activists and organizers. Governing required compromise, bureaucracy, and restraint. The transition was uneven. Patronage crept in. Jobs and contracts became political currency. Loyalty mattered. Critics were sidelined. The language of unity clashed with the reality of exclusion. Opposition parties sharpened their attacks. They accused ruling governments of betraying independence ideals. They pointed to continued foreign dominance and local elites growing comfortable. The debates grew louder. For ordinary people, daily life did not improve as expected. Housing shortages persisted. Urban overcrowding increased. Rural poverty remained visible. Prices rose faster than wages. The contrast between speeches and experience became harder to ignore. Independence anniversaries felt rehearsed. Promises sounded recycled. Trust thinned. In Jamaica, industrialization through foreign investment delivered mixed results. Factories opened in free zones. Jobs were low wage and insecure. Profits left the island. Workers noticed the imbalance. Unemployment remained stubborn, especially among youth. Education had expanded, but job creation lagged. Young people with certificates found limited opportunities. Frustration grew. In Trinidad, oil wealth did not translate evenly. Urban areas benefited more than rural communities. Social divisions sharpened along class and ethnic lines. Political rhetoric struggled to keep pace with reality. Barbados maintained stability, but at a cost. Tourism brought revenue, but also dependency. The economy became sensitive to external shocks. Workers faced seasonal employment and limited upward mobility. None of these outcomes were accidental. They flowed directly from the structures inherited at independence. Export dependence, foreign ownership, limited local capital, small domestic markets. Governments knew this. They debated alternatives. Regional integration was discussed. Economic cooperation was proposed. Progress was slow. The collapse of the West Indies Federation earlier in the decade still lingered. Unity had been attempted and failed. National priorities now dominated. Regional solutions felt politically risky. External pressures increased. The Cold War reshaped global politics. Caribbean governments were watched closely. Alignment mattered. Economic choices were interpreted through ideological lenses. Aid and investment came with expectations. Radical restructuring risked isolation. Moderate reform was rewarded. Leaders learned where the boundaries were. Public patience wore thin. Protests increased. Labor actions returned. Students, workers, and community groups voiced anger. The tone changed from hopeful to confrontational. In Jamaica, demonstrations challenged economic inequality and political favoritism. In Trinidad, social movements questioned who independence was really for. In Barbados, dissent was quieter but present. Governments responded cautiously. Some reforms were attempted. Wages were adjusted. Programs expanded. Structural change remained limited. The central contradiction hardened. Political independence existed. Economic sovereignty did not. Citizens lived inside that gap. By the late 1960s, the language of independence began to shift. It was no longer just about pride. It was about control. Who owned what? Who decided what? Leaders faced impossible choices. Push harder and risk capital flight. Move slowly and lose public trust. Every decision carried cost. The public mood darkened. Disillusionment did not arrive all at once. It accumulated. A missed opportunity here. A broken promise there. A sense that the system was not built for them. Independence had promised transformation. What it delivered felt like management. By the turn of the decade, frustration was no longer contained in conversation. It moved into the streets, the unions, the universities. The pressure was building. And the next phase would test how much strain these young nations could absorb before something gave. Chapter 3: The Cost of Broken Expectations. By the early 1970s, independence no longer felt new. The flags were familiar, the anthems routine. What remained raw was the sense that something had gone wrong early and never been corrected. In Jamaica, Trinidad, and Barbados, the emotional shift was clear. Hope had not disappeared, but it had narrowed. People no longer asked when independence would deliver change. They asked who independence was actually serving. Public frustration became visible. Protests grew larger. Labor actions returned with force. Students questioned authority openly. The tone of dissent hardened from disappointment to accusation. In Jamaica, unrest exposed deep economic and social divides. Young people faced unemployment despite expanded education. Urban communities felt abandoned. Political loyalty became survival currency. Violence crept into political competition. The state responded with urgency and defensiveness. Social programs expanded. Rhetoric sharpened. But trust was already damaged. Every intervention was measured against earlier promises that had not been kept. In Trinidad, the contradictions of oil wealth came to the surface. Revenue existed, but distribution remained unequal. Entire communities felt locked out of prosperity. Economic growth did not erase resentment. It intensified it. Social movements demanded a rethinking of power. They questioned foreign ownership. They challenged class hierarchies. They forced conversations that had been postponed at independence. The government faced pressure from all sides. International investors watched closely. Domestic critics grew bolder. Managing stability became as important as delivering reform. Barbados appeared calmer, but the strain was present. Stability masked vulnerability. Tourism dependence tied livelihoods to foreign demand. Economic shocks traveled quickly from abroad to local households. Workers felt the limits of respectability politics. Order did not equal security. Discipline did not guarantee advancement. The promise that patience would be rewarded wore thin. Across all three countries, migration became an answer. People voted with their feet. Britain, Canada, and the United States offered opportunity that home seemed unable to provide. The loss was quiet, but profound. Skilled workers left. Teachers, nurses, technicians, and tradespeople sought stability elsewhere. Remittances supported families, but the departure weakened institutions. This movement was not framed as failure. It was framed as necessity, a way to survive when national systems could not absorb ambition. The psychological impact was lasting. Independence had promised belonging. Migration suggested escape. That contradiction settled deep into national identity. Political culture adjusted to disillusionment. Voters became skeptical. Loyalty weakened. Participation declined. Cynicism replaced enthusiasm. Leaders learned to manage expectation rather than inspire transformation. Campaigns focused on damage control. Promises became cautious. Vision narrowed. None of this erased the significance of independence. Colonial rule did not return. Formal sovereignty remained intact, but the emotional contract between state and citizen had fractured. The early failures shaped everything that followed. Economic policy debates hardened. Foreign influence became a permanent concern. Distrust of authority embedded itself into public life. The lesson absorbed by the public was blunt. Political freedom without economic control changes symbols, not conditions. By the end of the 1970s, independence was no longer a starting point. It was a reference, a moment people looked back on to measure what had been lost, delayed, or compromised. The damage was not just material, it was moral. A generation learned to lower expectations, to navigate systems rather than challenge them, to survive rather than believe. Yet disillusionment did not end history. It redirected it. The questions raised in this period did not disappear. They deepened. Who owns the economy? Who benefits from growth? Who independence was truly for? Those questions would not stay quiet. They would return in sharper forms, under harsher conditions, with higher stakes. The early failures of independence did not close the story. They set the terms for every struggle that followed.